Some of us have spent the last few days investigating this essay by Dogen Zenji in what we're calling a Genzo-e Sesshin, Dogen's great Shobo Genzo, the true Dharma Eye Treasury, has 95 essays, and we took one up and thoroughly examined it, line by line, for some days now, and we're just finishing. So there's a little bit more to go, but for those just arriving, we can do a brief recap of this essay called Only a Buddha and a Buddha. Maybe kind of hard to recap Dogen, but we'll try. So, Only a Buddha and a Buddha is the theme here, which is a line from the Lotus Sutra. That only a Buddha, together with the Buddha, can thoroughly realize everything. And so Dogen begins by saying, Buddha Dharma cannot be known by a person. So that's kind of nice, because if we feel like after many days of listening to these teachings, we don't understand Buddha Dharma, well, as people, we can't. Us people, according to this first sentence, cannot know Buddha Dharma. But, as people, we've heard this teaching of the Buddhas that we have, or our true nature, is Buddha nature. That right with us people, every moment, is this clear, aware radiance of a Buddha, non-dual, empty awareness is right here with us, with our dualistic, obscured consciousness. We could even say the true nature of our dualistic, obscured consciousness is non-dual, open, boundless awareness. Already who we are, we don't need to create it, we can't create such a thing. We can just open to it as the obstructions and obscurations to it are seen through. So a person cannot know Buddha Dharma, but our Buddha nature is actually hearing all these teachings about Buddha Dharma at the same time as the person is hearing them. So this is possibly one understanding of only a Buddha together with a Buddha can thoroughly master Buddha Dharma, is that our Buddha nature, together with the vast Dharma body of the Buddha, the inconceivable Buddha mind beyond all location and time and space, that Dogen later talks about here as the entire universe. That's the Dharma body of the Buddha. That our Buddha nature, together with this vast universe of called the Dharmakaya, together realize the full extent of Dharma. Dogen doesn't say this exactly, but this is one way we could hear this, that only Buddha, our Buddha nature, together with the vast, boundless Dharma body of reality itself, together, fully exhaust Buddha, Dharma, truth. So Buddha, Dharma cannot be known by a person. Only a Buddha together with a Buddha can thoroughly exhaust it. And then Dogen goes into a whole section about realization invariably differs from our expectation of it. So anything we think about realization of Buddha from the point of view of a person is of no help to realizing Buddha. And it's not exactly that our thoughts before Buddha about Buddha that are not able to understand Buddha. It's not that those are not realization, he says. It's that actually the true nature of those thoughts is itself completely one with this Buddha, our Buddha nature. Our thoughts, the true nature of our thoughts, of our dualistic thoughts, is non-dual awareness. So Dogen says, past thoughts in themselves were already realization, but since we were seeking elsewhere, we think that thoughts cannot be realization. So that's a whole other theme that he gets into. Then he gives his practice of or explanation of what a Buddha is like. Buddha's wisdom is like being unstained, he says, which is like not wishing for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. So, which is a poetic way of saying not wishing for anything other than what's happening every moment. We look at something that's already beautiful, like a flower or the moon, and we think, what if it was just a little bit more bright? Maybe that would be like how Buddha would see it. A little more colorful, a little more bright. So not wishing for that is what Dogen calls being unstained. Also, like when it's fall, not wishing for spring to get here quicker. And when it's spring, not wishing it would last a little longer before the long, hot summer comes. Just according with the conditions of the vast universe, of the great earth, mountains, rivers, what Dogen calls the Dharma body. The manifestation of the Dharma body is this whole great earth, and if we're just in accord with it, not wishing for it to be a little bit more or less of what it is, then this is like Buddha's wisdom. So, he doesn't say this exactly, and we didn't even really talk about this, but it occurs to me now that that's like being in accord, if this universe of flowers and moons and mountains and waters is the Dharmakaya, then not wishing for it to be any different is like being in accord with the Dharmakaya, which is like Buddha's true, inconceivable body. And then Dogen quotes these ancient ancestors saying, the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self, and the entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe, or the great earth as it is the gate of liberation. The whole great earth or entire universe is the one eye of Vairochana, who's the Dharmakaya Buddha. For example, the entire universe being the gate of liberation means that you are not at all entangled or captivated by the things of this world. You might say, but I am entangled and captivated by the things of the world. But Dogen says, actually, We're not. This is how the whole world is the gate of liberation. But if we seek to go through the gate, it can't be done, because we are already immersed in this gate of liberation. So he encourages us to investigate all these points, of course. Then he gives another instruction, a kind of meditation instruction, quoting an old story. Once a monk asked an old teacher, "When hundreds, thousands, and myriads of objects come all at once, what should be done?" And the answer is,
"Don't try to control them."
The whole world of things is coming at us all the time in all kinds of confusing and good and bad ways. And the instruction is, at such a time, which is every moment, don't try to control what's happening. So these sections where he's going through, at first these sound like unrelated topics, but as we start to look at it all together, we can again hear this as something about this whole universe, this whole world of mountains, rivers, and moons, and flowers, being just as it is. If we want to accord with that, then we're not, we don't try to control it. And then Dogen goes on to say, to comment on this, don't try to change or control these objects. And he says, whatever is coming at us is actually not really objects. It's actually Buddha Dharma coming at us. It's not objects. All these things that are impinging on our experience and annoying us or pleasing us or whatever they're doing, they're not actually objects. We could say they're aspects of the Dharma body of the Buddha, since we've heard that the Dharma body of the Buddha includes everything in this world. Everything in this world is bits and pieces of the Dharmakaya. And it's not apart from us. That's another meaning of objects, is things that are out there apart from mind. So actually, in this inconceivable manifestation, expression of Buddha as the whole world, we could say that Buddha's mind is manifesting this whole world, and our Buddha nature and our mind is giving rise to the appearance of a whole world of objects and so on. They're not really outside us. They're not really objects apart from the subject that's seeing them. So then Dogen quotes another ancient Buddha saying, "The mountains, rivers, and great earth are born at the same moment with each person." In other words, there's not like an objective mountains, rivers, and earth before our mind comes on the scene. Like he says, if we look at mountains, rivers, and earth when a person is born, his birth does not seem to be bringing forth additional mountains and rivers and earth on top of the existing ones. Yet the ancient Buddha's word cannot be mistaken. So if our mountains, rivers, and earth are born at the same moment as each of us, then maybe there aren't pre-existing mountains or rivers and earth before we're born. And if this sounds strange, at least we might be able to open to the possibility that the mountains and rivers and earth that we look around at and experience are simply that, our experience of the mountains, rivers, and earth. And we all experience mountains and rivers and earth a little bit different. Like a mountain climber sees a mountain as a goal to conquer. A gold miner sees a mountain as something to exploit and get the gold out of. A wild fox sees a mountain as a home. So there's not really like a objective mountain out there. The mountain is just the experience of each being. So therefore, the mountains, rivers, and great earth are born at the same moment with each person. You can say our mountains, rivers, and earth are born at the same moment as us. And these ones that we see all around us are our mountains, rivers, and earth, not apart from this mind. And then he says, this is hard to understand, but you should try to understand it. And he goes on like that for a while. And then he says also that all Buddhas of the three times are practicing together with each person. And same principle here. We could say, when we think of a Buddha, we're creating that Buddha. And Buddha, can manifest us. We are completely, inconceivably interdependent with Buddha, all Buddhas of the three times, and therefore they're practicing together with us. And it doesn't seem like that. It seems like there's Buddhas in the past who are gone now, and they're not practicing with us anymore. But in the realm, again, of our Buddha nature, practicing with their Buddha nature, the Buddha nature doesn't come and go. It's timeless and spaceless. So Buddha, our Buddha, together with all the Buddhas of the three times, can realize Buddha Dharma thoroughly. So those are some themes, the main themes of this Only a Buddha and a Buddha essay. And that's a lot, you know. We spent hours and hours talking about these things, and this is the brief recap. But just hearing that so far, especially if you haven't been here for the Sesshin so far, is anything you want to bring up about that? At these points? Questions? Yes?
It says only a Buddha and a Buddha.
Yes.
Why isn't it? Well, I don't know if I'm going to ask why. If it were only a Buddha, that isn't it, I guess. It's a Buddha and a Buddha.
Yeah, that's kind of like the koan of this week for us.
Yeah.
We've been kind of talking about, doesn't one Buddha completely realize all there is to ever realize, right? One Buddha. So yeah, it's a very interesting thing then. So why only a Buddha and a Buddha, or you could also translate it as together with a Buddha. So it's implying there's more than one Buddha as needed even to realize the full extent of reality. Yeah, and Dogen doesn't really explain it exactly. Although you could say this whole essay is a response to that title.
Many years ago I went to a 7-day session, and unfortunately I have given myself an assignment, which was to accept being alone. And I failed. At the end of the session, I thought, this is I can't do this. I can't be alone. I have to be with somebody. There was a specific person I had in mind, but it now seems to me that it isn't necessarily a specific person. I don't know, but
Yeah, that it's
it
actually
looks like
impossible.
I did not fail. Mm. You know, that I was right all along.
Mm.
That it's not possible to be alone.
Exactly.
It's not possible to be realized.
It's not possible to be alone. And for a Buddha, we could say same thing. Buddhas are always practicing with all Buddhas. And it's that, in Zen we say like, not one, not two. So is there just one Dharmakaya, one non-dual, pure, naked awareness? Or are there different Dharmakayas? And I think in the realm of the Dharmakaya, it's the realm of not one, not two. So we can say there's, there is only one Buddha ever in this universe, and it can manifest as many different, in many different forms. Like, we all share one Buddha nature, and yet it's living through each of us separately. So, in that way, it's like kind of like one Buddha, but also like a Buddha together with a Buddha. Like, in a way, we're like a person talking with a person now, and as people, we can't really know the Buddha Dharma, but you could say our Buddha natures are also kind of like resonating together in an inconceivable way. We don't know how that is, but in that way, like this Buddha and that Buddha together are inconceivably, for better or worse, inconceivably, thoroughly exhausting Buddha Dharma. So, and also at this point of, our Buddha nature together with the entire Dharmakaya is also like a Buddha together with the Buddha. And another take on this, because Dogen talks about the Dharmakaya all throughout this, the Dharma body of the Buddha as the whole universe, he keeps coming back to. And then he also says, Buddha manifests a body and awakens sentient beings. So Buddha has a Dharma body, reality body, and then Buddha has a manifestation or transformation body called Nirmanakaya, in order to save sentient beings. So Dogen brings that up too. So although he doesn't tie this all together, we could also hear only a Buddha and a Buddha are needed to fully realize Buddha Dharma, because you can't just have this formless, spaceless Dharmakaya reality body. You need a manifestation to save sentient beings. So only the Dharmakaya together with the Nirmanakaya transformation body can fully exhaust Buddha Dharma, because the Dharmakaya in and of itself can't exactly save or free living beings. It needs a manifestation body. So that's another possibility of only a Buddha together with a Buddha. We need the Dharmakaya to actually produce the manifestation body, but we need this production of the manifestation body in order to relate to people who can't know Buddha Dharma.
We need the manifestation body to relate to the Dharmakaya.
We need the manifestation body to relate to the Dharmakaya.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You could say that the Dharmakaya and Nirmanakaya are in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And you could also say that's almost like beyond a relationship, because it's just Buddha. But we talk about these two bodies, or sometimes three bodies of a Buddha. We have also have this bliss body of the Buddha that we could say also is needed for the full extent of Buddha Dharma, because it needs to create these pure lands for the full extent of Buddha Dharma. It looks like we also need pure lands, even though as people we might not necessarily even go to these pure lands. They seem, for the full extent of Buddha Dharma, we need them. And the Sambhogakaya, the bliss body, through past vows, is able to create a pure land, which is like the ideal conditions for beings to realize Buddhahood, for bodhisattvas to realize Buddhahood. They need a pure land. We were talking a little bit about how Jikoji is kind of like a pure land. It's like, because the conditions are, you know, it's kind of set up pretty good conditions for practice. And that's where a pure land is just like perfect conditions for practice. It's like, and it's not, it's hard to even find those pure lands. It's almost like through our own vow, it takes our own vows to be able to locate and enter a pure land.
That's true. A lot of people get lost trying to come to Jikoji.
It's hard to get here. And when you get here, like, you know, they say too about this Sambhogakaya, like Amitabha Buddha is an example of a Sambhogakaya Buddha, that that people, ordinary people, can't actually see Amitabha. We see these pictures sometimes. Paintings have been done and statues have been made of Amitabha. But, well, why don't we see Amitabha? You could say, like, only the, like, bodhisattvas who have already removed a lot of obscurations can see Amitabha directly. They don't have to be a Buddha to see Amitabha, but they have to, you know, they're, like, our coarse obscurations prevent us from seeing Amitabha and seeing pure lands as pure lands. So it may be that even though Jikoji may be a pure land, it's like if we have a lot of obscurations, we might just see it as like this place that we have to take care of, and like you know, it's falling apart, and we have to, you know, we need another work day soon to take care of the pure lands. Kind of like has some structural problems. So we can go back and forth, and you know, when some of our obscurations are less involved, like maybe in Sashin, which nothing needs to be done here to Jikoji. It's perfectly it's perfectly pure already. And then Sashin ends, and it's like, oh no, we got to fix it up again. I think obscurations can kind of come and go. So, did you have a question?
You actually moved on to it after I was trying to interrupt you, but you're saying Buddha with the Buddha sounds to me like there's still some value and a hint of duality, because that differentiated oneness, you know, just wouldn't be satisfactory at some level. And part of it's the return as well. We've gone too far into the differentiation, and it's the returning that has value.
You're too far into the oneness, you mean?
Well, most of us have gone too far
into
differentiating a myriad of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you started by trying to get back to the oneness. Mm-hmm. And if you really made it back to undifferentiated oneness, you might have lost something again.
Yeah, so some point like this. I mean, we say by definition Buddha is free from all duality. So already it's a paradoxical statement in the first place to say only a Buddha together with a Buddha, almost, you know, strictly speaking, doesn't even make sense. But in Zen, well, actually it's from the sutra, but in Zen play, maybe something like you're saying that, which is a little bit like a manifestation body. It's not exactly that the manifestation body is dualistically separate from the Dharma body. They're actually non-dual, but when we talk about them, they have these two names. And that division into like the pure, undifferentiated oneness and a manifestation that's actually helping beings in practical ways on planet Earth, amongst the mountains and rivers and so on, that at least appearance of duality may be essential. Maybe that's how we can say it, is that the appearance of duality is needed to relate to beings who experience the world as duality.
It's the skillful means of the
skillful Dharma means. Kind. Skillful means, yes.
What of a hermit then?
Well, a hermit's Buddha nature is actually together with the vast Dharmakaya.
There's no appearance of duality, though.
Appearance of another person, you mean?
Well, yeah, because you said there needs to be an appearance of duality.
But not necessarily another person.
Yeah.
I think for a hermit, they're living amongst the mountains and rivers and the earth, which, interestingly, all this stuff is in this very strange play here, because Dogen is over and over saying mountains, rivers, and earth is another name for the Dharmakaya, which is you don't really find this in the sutras,
mm-hmm.
but you find it in Dogen and other Zen places. So in that way, you could say that hermit is probably living in the mountains, rivers, and earth. And therefore, that's like, he's like walking on the Dharmakaya. He's completely intimate with the Dharmakaya. His Buddha nature is dancing with, completely intimate with the Dharmakaya Buddha that's appearing as mountains and waters and so on. So we don't necessarily need multiple people to... Buddha doesn't have to take the form of a person.
Mm.
Although, often that's the most skillful means. Shakyamuni Buddha said, let's do this as a person this time around, because to help these people. But I have heard that sometimes the manifestation body, like Nirmanakaya, can manifest as non-humans, even like non-sentient beings, like a mountain. You know, maybe. Again, you might not find this in the sutras, but I have heard such things. It's maybe possible. So that a mountain could help wake someone up. You know, that's the job of a manifestation body of a Buddha, is just to wake people up from their delusion. So if a mountain could do that, it could be a manifestation of the Dharmakaya. And we have these... In the Blue Crook Record, there's several koans about a monk asks Yun Men, what is the Dharma body of the Buddha? And he says, a flowering hedge.
Mm-hmm.
So can it be a flowering hedge? Or a monk asks Da Lung, the physical body, this human body rots away. What is the indestructible Dharma body that doesn't rot away and doesn't come and go? That doesn't come and go. The pure Dharmakaya never appears or disappears. And Dalun answers, the mountain flowers bloom like brocade. The valley streams are brimming blue as indigo. Let's say, but that stuff's all impermanent, coming and going. How could that be the Dharma body?
Mm-hmm.
But in Zen, we say the whole great earth, mountains, rivers, the entire universe is the pure, unchanging Dharma body. There's a lot going on here. So now we have the end of this fine essay of Dogen, where he says, there's been a saying since olden times, no one except a fish knows a fish's heart, no one except a bird follows a bird's trace. Yet those who really understand this principle are rare. To think that no one knows a fish's heart or a bird's trace is mistaken. It's not that no one knows them. Because you should know that fish always know one another's heart, unlike people who do not know one another's heart. He's kind of critical of people there. He's kind of saying fish are really intimate with each other. People have a hard time with each other, and this may be true. You know that fish are less complicated. They may have less obscurations than we do because we just think so much. Fish maybe don't think so much, but they also. They also may be really hard for them to understand the Dharmakaya. Although it may not be an issue for them. We have issues. When the fish try to go through the dragon gate, they know one another's intention and have the same heart. So this is on the Huang, the Yellow River in China. There's apparently this place of steep rapids and waterfalls called the Dragon Gate, and the story in China is that when fish can swim up through these rapids and waterfalls, they become dragons. They turn into dragons when they pass through this Dragon Gate. It's kind of like a Chinese folk tale. So they, Dogen brings up this image as a kind of like the path of practice. It's like going through the Dragon Gate, and we have to leap upstream to realize the source. And fish doing this together, and they're like flipping and flapping through the rapids like this together. It's just this image of that intimacy of the fish. You can picture, right? Like they're trying with all their might to flip themselves up to the top of a waterfall, all together in this very dynamic way, and like their natures are totally singing together, right, as they do this. Where they share the heart of breaking through the nine great bends, which is apparently this yellow river has nine great bends. So sometimes they're just swimming around the easy flow of the bends in the river, and sometimes they're flipping up through the Dragon Gate, but they share the same heart. Again, when a bird flies in the sky, beasts, or, animals on the ground, do not even dream of finding or following its trace. As they do not know that there is such a thing, they cannot even imagine this. However, a bird can see traces of hundreds and thousands of small birds having passed in flocks, or traces of so many lines of large birds having flown south or north. Those traces may be even more evident than the carriage tracks left on a road or the hoof prints of a horse seen in the grass. That's quite a statement, huh? That the birds see these like tracks of other birds in the sky that we don't see, but they're even more obvious than carriage tracks or horse footprints, because birds see the sky as like their highway. They see the sky differently than us, which is yet another proof that there's not some objective sky. Birds relate to the sky. It seems like they would see it in a different way, just like fish see the water in a different way than we see water. And there's no right or wrong. It's not like the fish are more accurate or we're more accurate. It's just that the ocean is born at the same time as each fish, and the ocean is born at the same time as us. And the ocean that's born with us is a different ocean than the one born at the same time as the fish. It's a different ocean. That's the radical part. You might say, well, it's the same ocean that we see differently. But how could we say it's the same? The only way we can know the sky and the ocean is through our own mind, our own experience. And Buddhas are like this, are like the fish and the birds. Only a fish knows a fish heart. Only a bird follows a bird's trace. Only a Buddha knows a Buddha. only Buddha, together with the Buddha, can thoroughly realize the Dharma. You may wonder how many lifetimes Buddhas have been practicing. Buddhas, large or small, though they are countless, all know their own traces. So just like birds leave traces in the air, Buddhas leave traces. You never know a Buddha's trace when you're not a Buddha. You may wonder why you don't know. The reason is that while Buddhas see these traces with a Buddha's eye, those who are not Buddhas do not have a Buddha's eye and just notice the Buddha's attributes, like the Buddha's long earlobes and protuberance on the head and wheel marks on the hands and third eye poking out of his forehead. Those are Buddha's attributes, but we don't see the Buddha's traces. What do you think might be the Buddha's traces? Trace. As Dogen says in the Genjo Koan, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, all drop away. No trace of this realization remains. And yet, this no trace continues endlessly. The Buddha's no trace trace continues endlessly, and Buddhas could see this endless trace called no trace. The traceless trace of Buddhas. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. All who do not know should search out the trace of the Buddha's path. If you find footprints, you should investigate whether they're the Buddha's footprints. So you might find, you know, some traces. We think, is this a Buddha's trace? And then, well, let's take a look, and maybe we follow the footprints. We try, you know, running in the footprints to try to catch up with the Buddha who left them there and see if the Buddha left them, or would maybe just see, actually it's just an aardvark. They're aardvark prints.
What's an
aardvark? What is an aardvark?
Like an armadillo.
Like an armadillo.
Or an anteater, maybe.
An anteater, yeah.
He seems to be saying, though, that the investigation is still valuable, despite the fact that you're going to be going off on all these.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. We should investigate to see whether it's a, and half the time we might just find aardvarks who left the prints, or, you know, or other various beings who left these prints. But by, and if we keep tracing the prints, eventually we might find the Buddha. Yeah. Investigate whether the Buddha's footprints. And so we're talking about, you know, how do we investigate this if it's a no trace, if these footprints are no footprints, if the Buddha leaves no trace? Yeah, that's the question. How do we investigate no trace? But maybe possible, actually, to investigate.
Well, you didn't say investigate no trace. You said investigate traces, right?
But you said the traces are no trace.
Well, but first of all, you have traces, and then you investigate them, and then you have no traces.
You see the traces that actually maybe appear like traces, and when you look at them, investigate them carefully, you actually see that there are no trace. Yeah, that might be how it works. For example, like this essay looks like there's like about 270 traced lines of black words on white paper. There are all these traces that Dogen left, and but we could investigate them really thoroughly and find the tracelessness right there in those traces of words. I think that's why we have Genzoe Zeshin. Investigate Dogen's traces, but not just to play with the traces, which is, I have to admit, kind of fun, too. But to actually maybe discover beneath or within, right there in the traces, is tracelessness. Saved by the bell. On being investigated, the Buddha's trace is known, and whether it's long or short, shallow or deep, is also known. To illuminate your trace is accomplished by studying the Buddha's trace. Accomplishing this is Buddha Dharma. Thank you so much for all of you coming here today, and especially for all who've stuck it out through these days of trace investigating. And it's difficult, but I hope it's been joyful also. And may we continue to practice, and may this, any trace that we've left here after we leave this room, may this no trace continue endlessly.